You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. How are you all getting on? Good morning. If you're just after joining us, it's Friday again, which is for lots of people good news. For others, it's the start of their big busy working weekend. Lots of tourists about this weekend, of course, so anyone working in the hospitality industry is looking forward to a busy weekend. Thanks again to Deputy Mark McSharry, Dakota, Nick Veneman and Emma McGuinness for their contribution during the last hour. Thank you all for your texts that are coming in as well. A caller says, in a Banking and Payments Federation meeting with the Banking and Focus Group, the banks revealed that the government ruled out working with them. They said the Department of Housing is not going further with it. The government needs to show an interest in working with the banks. The government are not planning a zero cost. Well, it seems to me, and we'll hear the interview with the Taoiseach shortly. He referenced that a couple of times, which would suggest to me perhaps maybe there is something in the offing. Caller says, agree with Mark McSharry. I would not trust Micheál Martin as far as I could throw him. Completely self-serving. Another. Just to comment on your discussion re-road collisions. If you ever sit at the side of the road waiting to get out, you can see that probably 2 in 10 drivers have their eyes on their phones and not on the road. Distraction is the main cause of collisions. People taking chances and passing slower vehicles where they should not is another. Speeding is probably the least cause. That's according to Pat. Thank you for your contribution there, Pat. This is sort of separate to what we've been discussing, but an interesting point from a listener. As a parent, I have an issue with the GEA and all the hype around this weekend's game. I have children who play and they all have to buy their own gear until they reach senior level. If they play in a game, I, as a parent, have to transport them to and from the games and then I have to pay to get into them. Only senior players get paid and that's it, very little. Well, I'm not sure they get paid, but I take your point. England is playing Spain this week too and the ball boy will be paid more than a game player. Can anyone justify the charges of the GEA and explain where it all goes? Well, I suppose it's about developing and supporting the infrastructure. I take your point. I really, if professionalism is what leads you down the path of what soccer is right now, I really, for that reason alone, would not like to go down that route. But anyway, we're going to continue to build the hype. My apologies. Later on, just after 11, Oisin Kelly and his crew are going to be coming into studio and we're going to be linking in with Oisin's counterpart in Galway Bay FM and his guests, and we're going to be talking the big game on Sunday. It is Galway versus Donegal. So Galway Bay FM, Highland Radio of Donegal, linking in to discuss what's going on. So get involved in that. We want your texts. We want to show the support there is for Donegal heading into this game, please. Caller says, Greg, the social distancing rules are over, so why don't you bring your Friday guests into studio? It's actually one of the coincidences of all of that. It gives us far better access to different people from all over the country as well. But I take your point, and 9 times out of 10, the connections are good. But sometimes, obviously, like everything in life, even if they were in studio, a mic could fail. You just never know. Some other stuff I want to mention. Kathleen Crossan in Murrayfield, Remalton. Happy birthday from your daughter, Marie, and Brian. They want Johnny Hockey. We don't generally play music on this show, but we'll pass that on to later shows. Hello, Greg. Thanks to the lovely staff in orthopaedic wards in Letterkenny Hospital. That comes in from Mary Ferry, who obviously had a positive experience there. Helen McCoy in Remelton, who celebrates a big birthday today. Have a great weekend from Dennis, who quite rightly didn't mention an age. Good man, Dennis. All right, have a great birthday. I want to mention that there's a harvest fair on the 27th of July. It's at the Point Field in Pettigo. It's a day for all the family. You're invited to join them for lots of fun. There's an underage blitz, a barbecue, bouncy castles, live country and Irish music and dancing. There's going to be a fundraising auction as well. Commercial and pedigree lambs, calves, weanlings, hay, silage, poultry, and on it goes. It's all in aid of the Pitch Development Fund. So the GA money not necessarily going there when they have to do a big fundraiser for that. But listen, that's what we do. It's great. Okay, it is the 9 till noon show. Coming up after this break, we'll chat to Taoiseach Simon Harris. Moving on in the programme now, and we're joined on the programme by Taoiseach Simon Harris. Good morning to you, and thank you very much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you so much for having me on.
Good stuff. Listen, we've got quite a bit to get through, but just many people listening perhaps had less sleep last night than they might have intended because, of course, there was quite an important press conference given by Joe Biden. And given the potential global implications of the outcome of the US election, not least for us here in Europe with everything that's going on, do you have a view on if President Biden might step aside and give his party a better chance of succeeding in the presidential election later this year? Have you any concerns in that regard?
So look, I mean, President Biden has been a good friend of Ireland. I had an opportunity to speak with the president on the phone about 10 days ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, from Brussels. We had a 15-minute conversation, and during that time we discussed a lot of issues. Obviously, Northern Ireland, Good Friday Agreement. We discussed Joe Kennedy's role as a special envoy for economic issues in the north. We discussed the Middle East, Ukraine. And look, I had a very good conversation with him and was very grateful to him for his time. I'm very conscious in the position that I hold, obviously, when it comes to elections in other countries. We obviously don't share a view and we work with whoever is elected by the people. We wouldn't appreciate here in Ireland if US politicians started giving a view on our elections or the calibre of candidates or the likes. But President Biden is a good friend of Ireland and indeed a proud Irish American. And but what happens obviously in the elections and the electoral process is a matter for the people of the United States.
One of the biggest issues facing us in our country at the moment is housing and an awful lot of conversation in relation to that. How do you think your government is faring on housing delivery? And I suppose, too, it's not just about plans. It's actually people seeing, you know, shovels in the ground and what have you going forward.
So objectively, and I put myself under a lot of pressure to do better and do more on housing, but objectively, the government has seen during its time in office a very, very significant increase in housing supply. So my party first came to government in 2011. There wasn't a bean in the country, as we all know. There wasn't a functioning construction sector or banking sector, and there were fewer than 7,000 homes built that year. We now are smashing our housing targets each and every year. And this year we're seeing 308 new homes going to construction every single working day. That's about 1,400 a week. We've seen pretty much as many houses commence construction this year as did in all of last year. And we're seeing now the highest number of people buying their first home in 16 years and the highest number of social homes were given out last year than any year in my lifetime. You have to go back to well into the early 70s to see a higher number. That's the encouraging bit. However, and there is a however, because I'm not complacent, cocky or dismissive in relation to this, it is not yet enough. And even as recently as yesterday, Greg, I chaired a cabinet committee on housing where we're asking ourselves the question as to how can we now significantly increase the scale of ambition when it comes to house building and how can we get ourselves to 50,000 homes a year on average starting from next year. And you know, I can go through that with you, but I do think there's a way of doing that. I think we'll be closer to the 40,000 homes this year than 30,000 homes. I'm not saying we'll do 40,000, but we'll be at the upper end of the 30,000. And I think that gives us a very good base to actually say to the Irish people, hang on, we can do a quarter of a million new homes in this country between now and 2030.
What are the problems or what might we have to overcome? What comes to mind perhaps potentially is the actual workforce to complete this type of work.
Workforce is definitely a challenge, maybe a little bit less than it was. I met the Construction Industry Federation recently on this, and in my past job, in my last job in government, when I was Minister for Further and Higher Education, I had responsibility for apprenticeships. And yes, it's true, we need to see the ramping up of workforce. So if you want me to be brutally honest, I think one of the biggest constraints we have at the moment is planning. And is infrastructure. So more and more across the country, when I visit counties, I'm being told that, look, we could build more houses in this town or that village, but we need water, we need better water services, we need a sewage treatment plant. So I'm very much working to see now if we can make a very significant extra allocation to those key infrastructural projects. And the second is planning. You know, we live in a democracy. It's very important that people can access the planning system, can make objections, can access our court system. All of that's absolutely appropriate. But also it's important that we have a planning system that is you know, responsive in terms of deadlines and timelines. So beefing up on board Planola, and we're going to pass in September now a major overhaul of planning legislation that will set clearer timelines around things like appeals and such forth. So I think they're the two biggest challenges, being honest. One thing that is not a challenge is funding, actually. You know, we're seeing a very, very large amount of funding being spent on capital. But I do know this, like, there's still far too many people in your own county of Donegal, you know, living in the box room of their mum or dad's house, wondering, will I ever be able to move out? However, there are now a record number of home commencements in Donegal. And actually, there's, if you take the first quarter of this year, it is up 90, for Donegal, it's up 95% on the same period last year. So there are some encouraging signs.
Yeah, if I understand it correctly, I believe the commencements in terms of the vacant property refurbishment grant are included in that figure. Now, I'm open to correction on that, but I understand that to be the case. It's proved a very popular scheme. It's a very good scheme. Credit where credit is due, a huge uptake. But one of the biggest barriers for people taking up, and this is all about housing delivery as well, it's not all about new builds. One of the biggest barriers to that is the fact that people have to spend the money. They have to front load the money before receiving the grant. There's a fantastic team here working in relation to this grant. That is the type of the scheme with a slight tweak, i.e. if people could get stage payments in advance, that would greatly improve the delivery of properties here. And there's other little tweaks that could be done. If I was lucky enough to convert a townhouse, for an example, to three apartments, why can't I draw that down down that grant three times? You know, and that will bring investment into our towns and upgrade derelict buildings. So there are good plans there. But with minor tweaks, they could really, really start delivering big time.
No, I think that's a fair comment. And I mean, we do keep all of these schemes under review. Like, the vacant property refurbishment grant has now had over 5,000 applications approved. It's had many more applications in, but 5,000 applications have been approved. You'll probably remember the sum of that grant was much lower than it now is. So we made a decision, I think, last year to increase that to 70,000 if you take on a derelict home and 50,000 if you take on a vacant home, both of those being a large increase on the level of grant we would have provided before. But I take that point about stage payments. And like, I want people to know, we're open for business in terms of tweaks and new ideas. There's nobody in government, least of all me, saying everything's rosy when it comes to housing. Of course it's not. It remains the biggest crisis in our country, and it's one that causes intergenerational anxiety. What I am saying to people, though, is we have to look at what is moving in the right direction. So there are, if you look at commencement figures, if you look at completion figures, if you look at planning permission figures, if you look at home ownership figures in terms of people buying their first home, all of those numbers are going up, up and up. And that is good, but it is not enough, because we had a lost decade where, again, people don't need a history lesson, but where there weren't homes being built. And I think, you know, again, I'm sometimes a bit intrigued when I see media commenting on things like the Housing Commission report as though the government should be upset about it. The government asked for a Housing Commission because we want new ideas. We want more ideas. There's no room for arrogance or complacency here. And we now have, through both the Housing Commission report, through the ESRI research that was published last week, I think we have some really good ideas, targets, data, that will enable us in October to set new housing targets that will show the people of Donegal and show the people of Ireland how we're going to get to 50,000 homes each and every year. And that's what we need to do, not this boom and bust. One year we build loads of houses, then and you've ghost estates, another year nothing is built. We need consistent output year on year on year, and that's the plan.
You talked earlier on about the importance of Ireland's relationship with President Joe Biden, and there's another very important relationship as well, of course, and that's with our nearest neighbours, whoever is heading up the British government. It is now Labour PM Keir Starmer. His buzzword following an election was reset, and I suppose that would apply to some extent to our relationship with Britain. In the early weeks of his tenure, are you seeing positive signs in that regard?
Very much so. Look, I genuinely believe one of my most solemn duties as Taoiseach is to mind and nurture the Anglo-Irish relationship and to fulfil my obligation as co-guarantor of the Good Friday Agreement. And I'm seeing very encouraging signs that we have an interlocutor in the new British Prime Minister who wants to also absolutely live up to his obligations and his government's as co-guarantor. Why do I say that? Well, on day one, the Prime Minister phoned me. We had a good conversation. And part of that conversation, and really the substantive part of that conversation, was exactly that. How do we make sure we have a good interconnecting relationship to tease through important issues that affect people on these islands. He then invited me to meet with him in Chequers, his residence in next week, next Wednesday, for a working dinner. Again, we take encouragement from that sign that I think will be amongst the very first leaders that he'll welcome to the UK, the first that he'll welcome to Chequers. Again, I think that's a sign of the importance he's attaching to the Irish-British relationship. And look, we have a lot of issues we need to discuss. I want to discuss them with him first out of respect to the reset, but it's no secret that things like legacy and making sure that the legacy approach to legacy issues is victim-centred, human rights compliant, is grounded in the Good Friday Agreement. We need to discuss the common travel area. You know, we have a unique situation where we share a common travel area. How do we make sure that's not open to abuse? We need to discuss how we support the Northern Ireland Executive. Like, I'm excited about this, Greg, because for the first time in a very long time, I believe we have leaders in Stormont with the executive back up and running with Michelle O'Neill and Emma Little Pengelly, leadership in Dublin in terms of myself and my government, and leadership in London, all of which want to make sure we harness the full potential of the Good Friday Agreement. And there's so much to do, whether it's casement, whether it's the A5, whether it's a lot of the cross-border projects, indeed one that will affect people in Donegal around expanding the McGee campus in Derry so it can interlock with ATU in Letterkenny. Like, there's so much good work to do, and after years of hiatus, partisanship, we need now just to get back to the principles of the Good Friday Agreement and fulfilling what's really been an incredible gift handed to our generation from the last.
Just in terms of sort of living in a border area, sometimes even the internal decisions that are made, sometimes it feels like they don't consider us. One example for is the increase in the cost of petrol and diesel, which is coming down the line, and you're facing big calls for that to be deferred or put off or find some other way of working with those figures to offset it. But for us in Donegal and other border counties, you know, we're going to see, and I know it happens generationally, but we're baking this in. We're going to see more people now travelling across the border potentially to purchase petrol and diesel. You add into that maybe a difference in the price of groceries. It could even be the deposit return scheme tax and what have you. And sometimes it feels that the decisions are made for the greater good of the Republic without considering the implications for, you know, border life and border businesses. Do you accept that that observation?
I can see the concern, and I can see why we always need to be alert to it. And I can absolutely see that when you live in a border county, that obviously it's much more sensitive and responsive to things like different policy approaches in one jurisdiction to the other. Of course it is. But I can also tell you that when we bring memos to government, so the way government works is ministers bring proposals to government through what they call a memo. And part of that memo considers the impact on border issues and on north-south issues as well. So it is something that is always considered. Being truthful, it's not something that can always be very easily resolved. And look, it's a broader argument about the future of our island and a shared island. Because, you know, whether it's to pick an extreme example, but if you remember during the COVID pandemic, you know, you'd have a situation where there could be one approach taken on one part of the island and another approach taken on another. So it's something we're very aware to. However, I have to say, the fact that we now have interlocutors in a Northern Ireland executive, that the ministers in my government now have ministers in the Northern Ireland executive, there's an awful lot more now dialogue and engagement going on than obviously was going on over the last 3 years or so, when for much of that time there was a hiatus and a political vacuum.
All right, I'll be brief because I understand your time has got shorter, but this week the Ditch published advice from the Attorney General Paul Gallagher, the then Attorney General to government, as it relates to the defective concrete block scheme. Many feel it confirms the lived experience that the scheme was designed to frustrate and limit uptake. He advised the government scheme to compensate those affected by the microcrisis would lead to significant abuses from victims of this crisis. He said if the scheme is made more generous than at present, it also is likely to increase the number of applicants. You would have thought the scheme would have welcomed more applicants. He also said it's going to be essential to lay down stringent conditions which must be fulfilled by every applicant in order to obtain payment on the basis of any option other than the least costly option. Can you understand how this type of language is insulting and frustrating for the victims of this crisis who are living through this nightmare every day?
Of course I can. Of course I can. And when people read AG advice, it is just that. So it is a lawyer's perspective. But no one elected a lawyer to government, or certainly no one elects the Attorney General. I'm sure there's lawyers in government. No one elects the Attorney General to government. Ministers make decisions. and ministers decided a scheme in relation to defective concrete blocks. And what I want to say to the people of Donegal today is this, and you and I had a long chat about this on my last time we spoke, like, we have a scheme in place now. And it is seeing quite a number of applications. I think 1,644 applications to, let's call it, the original scheme, and another 514 to, let's call it, the enhanced scheme. But you put points to me on this radio station on behalf of your listeners the last day that are not unreasonable. And indeed, I engage with Donegal deputies. I would have spoken to my colleague and friend, Deputy Joe McHugh, in recent weeks as well. Like, we shouldn't have our eyes shut and our ears shut to being willing to work with people affected to make sure the scheme is delivering as planned. And I say that respectfully.
But how does that look, sounds really positive, but how does it look?
So I'll give you a couple of... So for the first thing, and I want to say this too, like, the first thing I want to say is, because this is important, there's a scheme in place and people are benefiting from the scheme now. And there's an urgency to the scheme because people are living in the most horrific situation. It's a very large scheme of taxpayers' money to try and right a wrong, and it's the right thing we're doing. There are other suggestions, though, that people have brought forward around the idea of, you know, can you access interest-free loans? What if I want to pass on, you know, if I sell on the home, should the benefit not be attached to the home rather than the home owner? There's an issue that was raised in the Dáil in recent weeks now around childcare facilities being affected. And obviously those childcare facilities aren't covered by the scheme because the scheme is residential. So government has given a commitment now that we need to work with the Department of Children to try and come up with a way of supporting a childcare facility, because it must be truly terrifying to have your child in a facility that is, you know, is potentially crumbling. And I know the Ardara childcare facility was raised with me in the Dáil in recent weeks as well, and officials are now actively engaging on that. So we have to continue to engage. We have to continue to be willing to listen. We also have to be truthful. We have a very large scheme in place. After years of vacuum, laguna, will there be a scheme, won't there be a scheme, can we ever access it? Can we do have a scheme in place, and people are benefiting in Donegal right now. And it's not just a Donegal issue now, it's obviously an issue that's spread to other counties. But as we engage, and I said this to you the last day, and I mean it, you know, as we engage, we need to continue to work. We have obviously the NSAI review going on as well, and we do have mechanisms for engagement as well, in terms of bringing people together too.
Okay, but the advice and even the scheme itself seems about limiting costs now and not following the science. And you talk about the importance of how we use public money and long-term plans. It feels like this is not necessarily about fixing houses correctly, but pushing people into the least expensive option for the state, which means we're going to have to revisit these houses, spend more money potentially into the future. We have to be sure, do we not, that we're responsibly using the public money?
Of course we do, and I don't mean to be argumentative on a sensitive issue, but I would reject out of hand the idea that we're not following science in relation to this. Everything we do has to be grounded in standards and has to be grounded in the work of the NSAI as well. Of course, every government in every issue, no matter how worthy, has to look at the issue in terms of the exchequer, the ability for it to be sustainable, of course, all of those things. You know, I go to meetings every single day, and whether it's health spending, whether it's housing, whether it's, you know, the budget, there's parameters, of course, for every single scheme, no matter how worthy. We all know that, and I think people appreciate that. But at the same time, it's a little bit like the point you made with me more broadly on housing about tweaks. You know, if there's an ability to follow common sense here, and if there's an ability to say, hang on a second, an interest-free loan, that could make a real difference. Hang on a second, there's an issue in a childcare facility. That's not covered. What are we going to do about that? We have to be willing to listen and be responsive. And that's the balance we're trying to adopt.
Okay. And we're going to be speaking to Nikki Bradley a little later on, and we'll get her views on her appointment by you. I don't know if you want a quick 30 seconds just to recognise that appointment.
Well, I do. Look, Nikki Bradley is someone I've been in awe of for many, many years. She is one of the most formidable disability advocates that I've come across in this country, and I've come across many. She's all about empowerment, independent living, resilience, nothing getting in your way, overcoming adversity. She obviously loves Donegal too, from Letterkenny, living in Milford. She's going to make a really important contribution, and it's been an honour to be with her and her family in recent days. So I want to congratulate her and very much welcome her to the team.
Taoiseach Solomon Harris, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg. Good morning.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
So there you have it. My second interview with the head of the government, of which I'm supposed to be anti, but there you go. It is what it is. You've heard what Simon Harris had to say there. Anything you wish to comment on? 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Next, we are going to be speaking to soon-to-be Senator Nikki Bradley. Okay, I did my next guest something of a disservice in saying soon-to-be Senator. Well, it's official from yesterday. Senator Nikki Bradley, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Did this come out of the blue for you?
Yes. To put it bluntly, yes. I've only known for a couple of weeks, which I presume that's how that works with nominations. Mm. So, yeah, it was just, I didn't even know how to react other than to be completely honoured. And it was an easy decision.
Absolutely. Was it, how long did you consider it for?
A couple of days. Yeah. Like, you know, I spoke to my friends and family and, you know, we had some conversations and I felt that it was, you know, and you know, I've been in here numerous times over the years. I've done my absolute best to do what I've always done in terms of disability advocacy, but you can only do so much by yourself. And it's, you know, it's tiring kind of pushing that by yourself sometimes. To now have quite a positive, I think, platform to be able to continue what I've already been doing and to reach yeah. more people and help more people made the decision easier.
Because in terms of advocating and getting that message across, it can be a tough grind on your own or even with a small team in terms of, I suppose, you know, getting the reach on social media or how many people you can actually get in front of and speak to. It's, you know, it's tough, isn't it? It's you know, if it's something you're passionate about, you're not going to give on, but it's a tough old grind.
It is, but there's ways that you can kind of increase your reach as well. And, you know, I teamed up with some incredible, like we've got the No Barriers Foundation next door. They're, in my opinion, one of the best charities that we have in Ireland. What they're doing for people with disabilities is absolutely incredible. And after my surgery, I actually availed of physiotherapy. I was in there not as an ambassador, as a client, whatever. So to be able to team up with people like that, that are doing great work themselves, you know, that there's power in that, you know, coming together, you can reach more people. So that's the plan moving forward as well, to team up with similar charities.
It's a long, long time. I don't know how long, but a long time anyway, since I first spoke to you about your diagnosis of Ewing sarcoma. And at that time, if my memory serves me correctly, you know, I can't remember how you framed your position in sort of trying to get the information out there, but you know, it was tentative at that time, really, as to, you know, the direction you were going in terms of speaking publicly. And what a journey between, you know, then and before then, of course, and now.
Yeah, and you know, speaking publicly about very personal situations in my own life, that in itself is quite scary because you're putting yourself out there. But it actually helped me. You know, my thinking behind going public with my own my various surgeries, I was thinking that, like, if I could help others by sharing my story, then it's worth it. But actually what ended up happening was they helped me. Yeah. You know, people from around the world reached out with, especially with this recent surgery with rotationplasty, it's an incredibly rare surgery to have on this side of the world. And I had to do my research online to even get some information on it. But because of, you know, the positive side of social media, I was put in touch with numerous rotationplasty patients around the world who were able to advise me. So, yeah, like it, I think it might have been 2013, maybe, when we spoke first. That's when I set up my campaign, Fighting Fit for Ewings. And at that time, it was very much based around the physical challenges, which I've always said, you know, exercise is such a great way to rehabilitate yourself. You know, you strengthen the body, but you also strengthen the mind. And I was very much the guinea pig in those physical mm-hmm. challenges. And that was kind of what we focused on at the start. But then, like anything, it evolved. And I became more and more passionate about disability advocacy in general. And as I said, teaming up with the right people to keep that as like a headline yeah. for people.
And I suppose the decision to accept the nomination, perhaps one of the easiest, because throughout the course of since your diagnosis at 16, you know, you've had to make tough decisions, haven't you, about the direction of surgeries or treatments or what challenges you may or may not undertake. Some of them completely crazy, I must say. But still, you know, you made the decision, you commit to it and you follow it through.
Yeah, that's true so far. So, yeah, with, you know, with this decision, it, as I said, it took a while to fully make that decision to go ahead. But I see it as the right next step for me. And everything I've done to this point, I've done it with good intentions, and that will 100% continue.
I hope I'm phrasing this correctly. I mean, obviously, you're going in there and you know, you're going into the Shannon and you'll give a voice and a perspective of for people with disabilities, but not a single issue senator either, I'm sure.
Not a what, sorry?
Single issue senator.
100% not, no. Yeah. I am very passionate about a number of different topics, and being from Donegal, and I know it's been mentioned a number of times this morning on the show, I will be 100%, and before I agreed to this nomination, before I accepted it, I should say, I sat down with the Taoiseach and I discussed the defective blocks issue. My own family have been affected by this. Almost all of my friends have. I don't think I know a single person that hasn't in some way been affected. And yes, other counties are coming out, you know, that there's more data being released that other counties are being affected. But we need to keep that voice strong that Donegal has been, in my opinion, hit the worst. We've seen the pictures. We've seen families last Christmas in caravans. Like, I think we need to be getting more visuals out there. We need to be getting more personal stories. That's something I would like to do. Maybe that's my small, like, you know, when I'm still learning all the facts, what I can be doing is meeting with individuals and sharing their stories, because people relate to people.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing kind of is missing sometimes in the Dáil and Shannon. And there are great people advocating on this issue, don't get me wrong, but is sometimes you wonder if as the penny truly dropped in the seats of power, the actual terrible distress this is causing. That it's not about, oh, I have a mortgage on my house and I'm paying a mortgage and I don't know how, you know, money. It's not really about that. It's the devastating impact it's having on children and families and relationships and lives.
Well, I think thanks to Deputy McHugh, he has done absolutely incredible work. And he has not stopped the fight in terms of, you know, what getting that message in front of the Taoiseach and everybody that message needs to be brought to. I do think, I have to say, and I'm only in the door, but from the conversations I've had, I do think the penny is dropping. I don't think it's fully dropped, and I will be honest on that, but I definitely think that there's positives coming. And I think the people of Donegal will finally start to feel that they're being listened to.
Fine Gael obviously are planning for an election around the country and also in Donegal. I mean, we could have an election in October, which is just 3 months away. So you're only in the door as a senator. And of course, you know, there is speculation that this is really a stepping stone to a run for Fine Gael as an election candidate. We know Deputy Joe McHugh stepping down. He's not going to reverse that decision. Are you leaving your options open? Are you ruling that in or out?
I'm basically saying that I want to get my feet in the door. I want to get settled in this role.
You might not have that choice.
Well, I'll do my best to get settled and to try and achieve some things, even if it is a short amount of time. You know, I think sometimes people underestimate what can be done with, even in a short amount of time. You know, if with the right mindset, as I've said many times, you can achieve quite a lot. What I will say right now is never say never. You know, I'm not saying either way, but if it's an option, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, if I can be a voice for the people of Donegal.
Did that form part of the conversation of this appointment? Like, in other words, you know, we really want you in the Senate. We think you have a great role. We think you can be a great advocate. But also, we do have a position upcoming in terms of who's going to run for the party in Donegal. And we also see you potentially as that person. Is that how that conversation went?
Honestly, no. It was more based around the Taoiseach's decision to have a key focus on disability, and by appointing me, he is using action rather than words. So that was really what we focused it on. And for me to be somebody with a visible disability in the Shannon is, I think it's a hugely positive move. So no, our conversation was mainly around that, and that will be my focus. Even if it's for a short time, that will be my focus.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of what you see as the key issues, the key things that need to be discussed and raised in relation to, you know, people with disabilities. Sometimes it feels like we go backwards, or that when we're planning, we aren't actually really planning with people with a disability considered.
Well, there's a number of different issues that I would like to raise. The first one actually being, and I'm not sure how many people are aware of this, I know that in certain areas there'll be people very aware of it, but the primary medical certificate, for example, I know when I was assessed for it years ago before I had my surgery, I was told, and I quote, I'm not disabled enough. And I know that there was a piece, I believe, in the Irish Times, an amputee who'd lost her arm, or his, I can't remember if it was a man or a woman, but they'd lost their arm. And you don't get the primary medical certificate with arm loss, which is absolutely ridiculous. Mm. And that is something that it may even be the first thing I bring to the channel that I strongly I feel about it. And I know it has been discussed before, but again, more voices, more power, because that is something that needs to change. And the rules date back to, God knows, 50-odd years ago. Those rules need to change in terms of the criteria, needs to change. One thing I would love to focus on in terms of disability is some people might see it as smaller issues, but I know for people living with disabilities, daily, you know, basically it can increase their, I don't know the words to describe it, but I'll just explain what I mean. So the likes of the Universal Access Key, I mentioned this during the week. It's rolled out in the UK and in parts of Europe. So it's essentially, if you're travelling, if you're in a car and you need to use the bathroom, say you pull into a garage, we've all seen the misuse of disabled toilets. You know, I know when I go in, sometimes there's a ladder or a broom. Yes, it's yes. A storage cupboard.
All those yellow floor wet signs, yeah, that seems to be a spot.
Just
to
there
pop
constantly.
There, yeah.
The idea behind a universal access key would be that the lock would be changed and that only people that need to use those bathrooms would have a key. Mm-hmm. So that stops then. People sometimes put a sign on the door saying, get a key from reception, but maybe the toilet is miles away from the till, and then a wheelchair user has to go, you know, increasing their distance just to use a bathroom. Things like this make a huge difference to the daily lives of
people.
And
in this day and age, you know, you could carry a card in your purse or wallet and just tap. There are options,
and that might seem like a small issue, but I think focusing on these smaller issues that will make daily life so much easier for people with disabilities is really important. And there are obviously the bigger issues that people are aware of, you know, waiting times for certain services, all of that. For as much as I can, I will certainly raise those issues. But I think where I would like to focus is on the day-to-day things that will improve the lives of people and their families with disabilities.
Some might, you know, have questioned your decision to, you know, go in as, I mean, you're an independent, are you? Was that part of the not the deal, but the opposite? Because you could have been, you know, we've seen the likes of Senator Eileen Flynn nominated by the Taoiseach, but is as an independent. So what was the logic there to go in as a Fine Gael nominee? Not actually, obviously as a Fine Gael nominee, but as a Fine Gael representative?
Well, I was already a member with Fine Gael, so okay. I have been for about a year. So I did a female mentoring course with them last summer, and I learned so much about it that I align with Fine Gael, and especially now with our new Taoiseach, it fits me. So there was no question there. I was already with Fine Gael.
The big issue here is always going to come back to how this government, and it's probably likely that this government will be in power in the next election. This Fine Gael will be in power in the next election. I think it's probable. It really comes down to, as a Donegal person, though, really, as you say, we're all affected to one degree of separation to the defective concrete and seeing delivery on that. Joe McHugh left the party. He'll go back in. There's red lines. Will you have any red lines in considering running for that party if you decide to do so as a TD?
At this stage, can't answer that. I want to, you know, look at everything. I want to even read up more on it, because as I said, and I hold my hands up, politics isn't my background. So in terms of information, I don't
that
have
could be
all
an advantage.
Of it. Well, maybe. But what I am willing, I'm willing to learn. And, you know, when the Shannon goes into recess, I will be using that time to meet with people. I already have meetings lined up for next week with people in Donegal specifically on this. And I know that there are committees, there are groups. Obviously, there's an actual political party now. I will be doing everything I can in Donegal to get every bit of information I need. And then maybe if we're back in with you again, we can have...
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think another thing you're quite keen on, and I think it's something that we all need to focus on more, is getting young people to exercise their vote. It was hard won, and we have to identify why people don't. Is it because they're disinterested? Is it because they don't think it matters? Do they think that people aren't speaking to them? Or maybe they don't even understand it. That's another thing you're quite important on, just finally, Nikki, or not quite important on... quite passionate about.
100%. I some of my friends didn't, and I'll hang them out to dry here. didn't vote, and they had no reason not to. They all have cars, and I do think that there's a slight element of disinterest, and. You know, politicians have a certain look, have a certain way about them, and I'm hoping to bring something slightly different, that I'm just a normal person. I'm not going to start talking different, I'm not going to start behaving different, and I'm hoping that younger people might decide to follow maybe my journey, and then along the way, that interest in politics might grow, and that could then get them to the polls.
Senator Nikki Bradley, thank you.
Thank you.
Been lovely chatting to you. We'll talk to you again into the future. We'll be back with more after the break. Okie doke, very shortly, we're looking forward to, we're going to team up with our colleagues at Galway Bay FM. We're going to be talking about the big game at the weekend. Which game is that? Of course, it's Galway versus Dublin. The weather, though, mainly dry this afternoon and evening with some sunny spells developing. Temperatures 15 to 17 degrees tonight, mainly dry with clear spells, but cloud will thicken overnight with scattered showers, lows of 8 to 10 degrees in light northerly winds. Good luck to Nikki. My niece had that cancer too and is doing great. I have a disability myself, and it's great to see someone with a disability in the right place to speak for us. Yeah, I agree. Delighted to have a strong woman in Donegal representing us, says another listener. That's two really now in the Senate. Shannon, two very strong women, strong speakers, whether your politics align to them or not. But still, it's good to see that progress. Congratulations to Nikki. I don't know her. I think she'll be a great voice, though, for the people of Donegal. I wish her every success in her new role, a voice for Donegal, a voice of hope and a voice of change. That comes in from Siobhan. Siobhan, thank you very much for your assessment there. Listening to the Taoiseach, that was like listening to the farming forecast on a Sunday. A load of spin still waiting for the sunshine and the heat wave. And that's it, you know, and every interview is not going to be like a oh wow moment or a gotcha moment or whatever it might be, but it puts answers on the record. And that's what I can help then, or that's what I can use to sort of formulate coverage and questions going forward. You take commitments, you log them, and you see how those commitments are delivered on, and so on and so forth. Right, okay, let's take a break. Back with the news, and then that's entertainment, taking a break because we're focusing on sport, which is hopefully going to be entertaining.